Hello there, this is Mark Bonner, and I play the 11. And you are listening to
Pieces of Eighth.
I'm a doctor. But probably not the one you're expecting.
Welcome to Pieces of Eight. Or perhaps maybe for 1 week only, we should change that title to Pieces of 11.
Just in case anyone missed our exclusive introduction at the start of the podcast, you better explain that for the listeners, Becca.
I mean, this is a good point. This week, we're putting the 11 in focus as we discuss the Big Finish creation, who is quite probably the greatest and deadliest foe that the Eighth Doctor has faced to date.
In this podcast, every week, we take a look at a different aspect of the Doctor Who universe that features the incarnation of the Time Lord as played by Paul McGann. I'm not Paul McGann, I'm Kenny Smith.
Nor am I, and I'm Rebecca Chapman. You join us as we continue our quest to feature the Eighth Doctor's exploits, whether on screen, in books, novellas, full cast audios, short stories, comics, animations, talking books, or anything else we can lay our eyes, ears, and hands upon. Shoulders, knees and toes.
Knees and toes. Or is it cheese and toast?
Cheese on toast. I love cheese on toast.
With a little bit of Worcester sauce.
It's the best.
Yeah, this is definitely the Pieces of Sandwiches podcast. Did you know that in Scotland, particularly in the west of Scotland, people call sandwiches pieces?
Oh, that's so cute.
There you go. You can get a jilly piece, which is a jam sandwich.
Oh, that's so cute.
But I wouldn't refer to it as such because I'm from Cambuslang and we tend not to speak
like
that.
It's a jam sandwich.
It's a jam sandwich, not a jilly piece, but there you go. Anyway, we're not here to talk about sandwiches. We're here to talk about the 11. But perhaps if you don't know who he is, then we should maybe let Mark Bonner, that's yes, the Mark Bonner, the guy who's on TV at the moment in Guilt, Shetland, and pretty much been in all the best TV shows around. Let's let him explain who this character is, as Mark and I recently had a chat for the podcast I do in my day job on Scottish Field magazine.
The 11 is a Time Lord from Gallifrey, but he's slightly unstable in that he retains all of his previous 10 regenerations within himself, and they all vie for the number one spot, I suppose is the best way to put it. So he can have, there can be whole scenes that are just me talking to myself in with one of my others or many of my others, depending on what the situation or argument is about. I've been doing the 11 for I don't know, 5 or 6 years maybe now. And it's an absolute joy every time to revisit him and see what else have in store for him. He's a great character and he's massive amounts of fun to play. It's bloody exhausting, but he's good fun.
Yeah, I'm just glad that the 6 hasn't popped through to visit us today to try and kill us all.
Yeah, he's the most exhausting of all. I'm glad they're quite economical with the 6, which I'm always glad about because that he takes the most out of my fragile old body.
And getting to work with your wife, Lucy, there on the most recent set, that must have been really fun. The fact that she gets to have a go at what you do as well.
Yeah, it was brilliant fun. She was in it. She got the comfy seat at the bottom of the garden. I got the confined space under the stairs. But it was really special to be able to record together, albeit, you know, not in the same studio together. But yeah, we recorded each other down our respective headphones to have a laugh and sent each other messages and stuff. It was good. It was really good fun. We haven't worked together for a while and it was really nice to be able to do it again.
That's brilliant, Mark. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Kenny.
It's good to see you and have a pleasure, mate.
So that's the 11 briefly explained, but who are his different personalities?
The 11 has featured in stories with the 6th and 7th Doctors over the past couple of years, as well as the 8th, and the script for his encounter with Sylvester McCoy, Dark Universe, That's the story that retrospectively was released to lead into the first story that the Eleven features in Doom Coalition, the titular The Eleven, and the script for that, which is available to Big Finish subscribers, revealed his different characters. So let's hear who they are.
The Eleven, a Time Lord criminal whose previous personas come to the fore at inopportune times of excitement and stress. These are The One, fussy old archivist, pedantic and knowledgeable on many Gallifreyan secrets.
The Two, calm, reasonable, convincing, charming liar and manipulator.
The Three, a childish, playful, self-centered persona, prone to petulant tantrums if crossed.
The Four, sophisticated game player, convinced of his own intellectual superiority.
The Five, wisecracking and confident trickster, the joker of the pack.
The Six, a crazed psychopath prone to arbitrary acts of murder.
The Seven, precise and clinically analytical scientist, prefers elegant solutions.
The Eight, a short-lived but thoroughly decent man living with the torment of what his other lives have done.
The Nine, greedy kleptomaniac, wants to steal everything and won't let anything go.
The Ten, a deceitful mesmerist capable of hypnotic control.
And finally, the Eleven, the cold as steel gentleman, uptight and utterly ruthless.
That is a hell of a lot of personalities, and we haven't even mentioned the 12. Becca, I remember when I outlined the Eleven to you, God, it must have been early last summer in 2020, and trying to explain who he was, and you were just desperate to hear more about him, weren't you?
I was. And I know we haven't spoken about the 12 yet, but that is not what this podcast is about.
No.
Yes, the 11 sounded fascinating. Like the idea of, what do they call it? It's regeneration.
Regenerative.
Dissonance? Oh,
that's the one. Yes, well done.
Thank you. Yeah. So the whole idea of that sounds fantastic because, of course, something like that could happen. If you're regenerating that many times, you know, of course.
Yeah, and it's such a brilliant idea. It's, as we'll hear shortly, but it's just such a fantastic concept. The fact you've got all these personalities in the one body and they're all fighting to get out and take control. We've probably all got an 11 in us somewhere where we've got, if we're having a down day or a sadder day, we don't often feel like it, but we put on the happy front just so everybody thinks we're okay. But we definitely have those moments when you almost like that you want your inner sadder self to come out and just go, oh, shut up and leave me alone. And just, I think it's a very clever observation. But I think the wonderful thing about the Eleven is that at no point has he become like a cliche for schizophrenia or anything like that, which could have been very easy to do and also could have been quite offensive. But I think the way in which he's been done, but I suppose at no point has he ever referred to as having a dissociative identity disorder. It's all been carefully and sensitively done. In fact, and he's very much, yes, there's perhaps that the roots of the character are based in something that in the human condition, but there's far much more to him than that.
Yes, he's a fantastic character and I want more and there's not enough of him.
Oh, I don't know if you've listened to Dark Universe or the Sixth Doctor's Encounter with the Eleven, because there's plenty more of them there. And of course,
that is true. Really listen to the Eighth Doctor's class.
And he's coming up in the next series of Unit as well, where he's the ongoing recurring foe across the four box sets with four episodes in each. So yes, I look forward to that. I can never have enough of my fellow Scotsman, Mr. Bonner, who, as I've mentioned before, used to live when he was a wee boy about a mile away from where I'm sitting just now.
Aww. That's nice.
So yes, that was something that we bonded over very quickly, was the fact that we both live in East Kilbride, or have lived in East Kilbride. And yeah, he's just such a nice bloke. But we'll come to that later on. And of course, Mark is an absolute gent because I've got to know him quite well. And last year, I think when everybody was having a pretty crappy time with lockdown, and you've mentioned before that you weren't in the happiest of places. And I mentioned to Mark just after you'd discovered the wonders of the Eleven, and he did something special for you, didn't he?
He did. He did the most amazing video message. It was, thinking about the fact that he did that leaves me speechless because it is fantastic.
But the fact that he went out of his way, went into his garden, wrote a wee script for himself and, you know, just basically you get a minute of the 11 that nobody else has ever got or ever will have. and a wee message just to remind you that, you know, things will get better, and thankfully they have.
They have indeed. I am in a much better place now.
Yes, indeed.
And I still occasionally go back and listen to the video message.
That's so brilliant. It was just so brilliant, the fact that you did it. Yeah, he genuinely, Mark Bonner is one of the good guys, and I just wish all good things for him in life in general. So there we go.
Me too.
Yeah. So it's generally accepted that The 11 was created by Big Finish senior producer David Richardson, as well as Ken Bentley, who was the script editor and director of Doom Coalition.
It is, but we recently spoke with Ken about his involvement with the creation of the character, and he was quick to set the facts straight as to how the character came about. So, Kenny, let's meet Ken. Oh, this is going to be confusing.
No, it won't be. He's Ken. I'm Kenny. Easy.
Are you sure? Are you not Ken?
No.
Well.
I think so. Anyway, let's speak to our first guest.
Hi, I'm Ken Bentley, and I direct one or two plays for Big Finish Productions.
Ken, welcome to Pieces of Eighth, and especially delighted to welcome you as one of the fathers of The 11.
That's possibly too generous a title, but could I just say great podcast title, by the way. like that. Yeah, I mean, it's very kind of you. I helped other people with much better ideas than me to realise the character. But I can give you an insight into how it happened, but,
yes,
but
well,
I feel I can't take any huge amount of credit.
You've had quite a long association with the ongoing Eighth Doctor adventures now, haven't you? All the way back to Dark Eyes.
Yeah. Dark Eyes. Was it two or was it three?
Yes, it was three.
I'll tell you, I'm surprised I actually managed to know that, to be perfectly honest with you. It could easily have been any Dark Eyes number. Yes. Don't know why, really. I do know why. Nick's really busy, and he's always juggling what he's doing and what he can do and what he's got time to do. My career at Big Finish has been sort of scurrying along behind Nick, and anything at times when he's busy. I mean, there have been times at Big Finish where he's suddenly at very short notice had to go and film with the BBC for the television series. So he'll suddenly be unavailable for something that he was sort of prepped and lined up to be working on. And he's always been very kind and generous and sort of asked me if I'm available to help out with those things. So I've always been in that position of stepping in when Nick can't, or helping out, or if he's too busy and he just needs to offload some work, being there to do that for him. And I don't know how and why that happened at that time back then. How many years ago was it? God, it must have been a few years ago now. I bet it was TV. I bet he was really busy with the TV series back then, wasn't he? There was a really, really busy period for him. Anyway, hows and whys, I don't know. But yeah, he said, do you want to sort of pick this one up and run with it? So I did. And I didn't know at that time what it would be. I mean, Dark Eyes 1 was it the first four-story box set at Big Finish?
It was the beginning of them, yes.
Yeah, and it really did start a sort of whole new format for the company. And even then, even when I was doing 3 and 4, we sort of knew... When Nick did Dark Eyes 1, I think it was just called Dark Eyes. It wasn't called Dark Eyes 1, was it? It was just... It wasn't planned to be any more than one. I think everybody knows this. But it was very successful, and so it became a sort of... story across four box sets. So I knew going into 3 that it was going to be 3 and 4. We knew that. But after that, we didn't know what it would be. But that four box set format just proved incredibly popular. And so from that point on, it became, that's how we did the Eighth Doctor. And so from then it was, what was it? Doom Coalition, Ravenous, Stranded?
Yep.
God, it's so... Yeah, but I suppose that in itself, four box sets for each of those is 2, 3, 6 years, isn't it? Yeah, I suppose it is. It seems as if we should have done much more, but of course, it's four box sets over a two-year period for each of those. So yeah, that just became that format. And then it's been interesting to see how that's been picked up elsewhere.
So yourself and David Richardson are acknowledged as the people who came up with The 11 as a character. What do you recall about those early discussions?
Oh, you see, we need to correct the records here, because it was very much, it's David Richardson who came up with the idea for the character. When we used to record in studio in the days before, we would always meet at Paddington, and then we'd walk to the studio from Paddington, which was about a 30, 35 minute walk. And we'd always just chat about all sorts of things, but often chat about projects about the productions we were working on and what we might do with them. So we would do a lot of sort of planning. All of Doom Coalition was a result of those walks into the studio in the morning between David and I. We planned the whole series on those walks in. I remember that day, you know, why I don't know, possibly just because Eleven's become such a well-loved character, such a popular character. It probably just means that I found myself over the years talking a lot about the 11, but I don't have a great memory. As anybody who knows me will tell you, I don't have a great memory. But I remember that day walking into the studio, and I can tell you, we used to walk along the canal towpath that goes all the way from Paddington up through to, I can't remember where it is now, Ladbroke Grove, Westbourne Park, Ladbroke Grove. And I can tell you exactly, I can remember exactly where it was on the towpath where David said, "I've had an idea. Tell me what you think of this." And he described the character of the 11, not in the sort of detail we know now about exactly what each incarnation is. We sort of talk more with writers, and I think Matt Fitton had a lot to do with coming up with all of those different personalities. But he described the sort of essential nature of the 11, and I mean, instantly, it's one of those ideas that if anybody were to describe the character of the 11 out loud, you'd just say, well, yeah, I wish I'd come up with that one, because any really good idea is at once brilliant and the sort of seemingly most obvious thing to do. I mean, why somebody in the world of Doctor Who hadn't come up with that idea before then, I don't know. But utter genius on David's part for thinking of it. Just brilliant. So I said, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a no-brainer. That's going to work. That's going to make a great character. And yeah, and has.
What point did casting Mark Bonner pop into your heads?
David again. This is why you should be talking to him, not me. But maybe it's good. Maybe it's good that I'm here, just that I'm singing his praises, because he'd be suitably modest about it. David had worked with Mark once or twice previously. I don't know what on. So he'd worked with him. He knew he was a lovely guy, enthusiastic about the work. But also Mark had been doing some really bold stuff on television. I think he may have just won his BAFTA roughly around that time. It wasn't just that he had a profile, but he had a profile for doing some really bold, just making bold choices as an actor, bold performances and quite jaw-dropping performances. Those sorts of performances you see once in a blue moon on screen. We're all used to actors and what actors do, and they're all brilliant. But every now and then there's a performance that's just astounding, and it gets everybody's attention because of that. And Mark had just been sort of going through that process on TV and getting that sort of recognition. So it was David's suggestion. I'd known of his work because of what he'd done on television, but haven't worked with him previously. But I'm always perfectly happy to go with David's recommendations on these things, because he's got a very good ear for it. We often talk about casting and pitch ideas about. So I know from experience David's got a really good ear for these things. He came up with the idea of the 11, which is a brilliant idea. He came up with the idea of casting Mark in that role, which was another brilliant idea. So all of these things are making my job, to be perfectly honest with you, really easy. David did all the hard work. It was easy for me to come in and just work with Mark to help him bring the character to life.
So how much of a brief did you and David give Matt Fitton in terms of the established personalities?
Not a lot, really. I mean, Matt's great. Matt's brilliant. We love working with Matt, and he knows Doctor Who. He knows what Doctor Who needs. So I don't know that we gave him a great deal of information at all, really, beyond the fact that obviously it's a Time Lord villain, and so it needed villainous. Each reincarnation needed to be, or regeneration needed to be, a villainous regeneration. But even then, even in amongst that, having the idea of the eight being being good is a lovely idea, because that's always I love it when the eight crops up. The eight isn't just my favourite character because he's a nice one. The eight's my favourite character because he's trying to be nice in amongst all of this evil, and is constantly onto a losing battle, which is just another lovely device. I don't know who came up with the eight. I may be, with apologies if I'm doing somebody else a disservice, because of course the 11 sort of grown over time as different writers have had to introduce different aspects of the character, maybe different regenerations well, we've actually experienced some of these other regenerations now. So it's sort of the contribution has come from many people over a long period of time. So exactly how these things have all come together, I'm not entirely sure. And as I say, I apologize if I'm doing anybody out of a credit they deserve. But Matt, I'm pretty sure it was Matt who came up with that first. On every, for the benefit of anybody playing the role, and for Mark, the first page of every script is a breakdown of the 11 characters. Just so there's a cheat sheet. So if you ever need to refer to who the four is or who the seven is, you can just have a quick look on that list and get a very short character description to remind you. In the early days, that was useful. Less so now, because Mark's got his own systems for remembering. But that's always there, so people know. And also for anybody else who's new to the character, they can, and playing another role in the play, they can at least read that and get an understanding of who this sort of crazy, chaotic character is. I could be wrong, but I think Matt came up with the sort of bulk of that first list. And we may have all sort of contributed a little bit. He may have come up with sort of seven out of the 11, and then a couple of other people had some ideas. I'm not sure.
It's appropriate that so many voices have contributed to giving the 11 so many voices, yeah. Which I love.
Yeah.
Because the first time I spoke to Mark about playing the 11, he said that he'd had the idea of using different accents for the different incarnations, but that was very quickly dropped. What do you remember about that first day in studio?
We don't have a great deal of time to sort of discuss these things. We have a bit of time. I always make sure I give people the opportunity to have a bit of a chat. But obviously, we've got a lot of plays to record in a short period of time. So we don't have a huge amount of time in studio to talk about these things. But it needed to be talked about. We'd never done anything like this before. So we needed to have a conversation about it. And we did chat. And yeah, we did talk about a few things like that. And how I remember the sorts of conversations we were having in the whether this was, if you like, these were sort of in completely different voices. So where every time the one of the other characters or other regenerations spoke, whether it should be a completely different character, almost as if a person has regenerated into a physically different human being, or whether it's an internal voice that's sort of coming through the 11's own mouth, as it were, voice box and mouth, and therefore whatever the voice was originally, it's only ever going to sound like the person who's speaking now. So we were having all those sorts of conversations. I suppose it's a sort of creating a kind of internal story logic as to how this works and how it's going to work. And I don't know if that time we'd even thought about whether we were going to meet any of the other regenerations and therefore how this might impact on other people. But the logic for us seemed to be, and also just to make, it's a tough role to play for reasons we'll come to. It takes a lot of work to play a role like that. And we knew that. I knew that going into it, that this wasn't going to be a walk in the park for Mark. And so we needed to find ways of doing it that were at least made it as easy as possible, if you like. Not that it's ever easy, but as easy as it possibly could be. And so for me, that was one of those. If we were to try to give each character a completely different voice, that would have been to try and keep on top of that and bounce between them as quickly as was necessary in the storytelling. I think would have just been too much to ask of any actor. And so we tried to find, what I was trying to do was find ways of doing it that would make it very clear to the listener what was happening, that we were hearing all these different regenerations, but also as straightforward for Mark in terms of keeping on top of who was speaking and how they were speaking. So they have, it was less about actually having different voices, and it was more about being different characters, really. So it's the same actor playing slightly different characters rather than one actor trying to transform themselves into lots of different actors or mimicking other voices and other styles.
Were you surprised at how popular the character has become with fans?
Yeah, I suppose, because as much as it was obviously a really good idea for a character, and it is, yes, because there have been so many great characters and villains and monsters in the world of Doctor Who, and there are so many that fans are so fond of, that to actually, I think, come up with a sort of introducing somebody new into that mix that would be as embraced as much as the 11's been embraced. Yeah, I probably, in my naivety, didn't really sort of stop to think about that. But it's happened at Big Finish in the past. I know Charlie is talking of the Eighth Doctor. Charlie's very fondly thought of amongst fans and listeners. So, you know, it's happened before, and there's no reason why it shouldn't happen again. But yeah, the 11, I probably am surprised. I probably was surprised, only in the sense that anybody who comes up with ideas, you never... Not that I came up with this idea, I'm not trying to take credit for it. I just mean, sort of broadly speaking, anybody who comes up with an idea probably never thinks, oh my God, that's such a brilliant idea, everybody's going to love this. You just think, oh, yeah, well, okay, that works in story terms, that's brilliant, that'll, you know, that'll be fun. You think that'll be fun. It's going to be fun to listen to. You never think this is going to be one of the most highly thought of characters that's ever been introduced to the world of Doctor Who. No, you don't go, you just don't go there. Or most people don't, hopefully. So I don't think any of us really thought beyond the fact that this was a really exciting character to introduce to a story, and it would be fun, both to do and hopefully to listen to. But beyond that, it's just been a bit bonkers, really, hasn't it? But having said you don't think about it beforehand, you know, in retrospect, it doesn't surprise me, partly because in the world of Doctor Who, as I say, the fact nobody's come up with the idea before, that's what makes it such a good idea. Any good idea should always have that quality of thinking, damn, I wish I'd thought of that. That's bloody brilliant. And it has that quality. The 11 has that quality. And particularly within the world of Doctor Who, you think, yeah, why is this is such a good fit? So I'm not surprised that he's popular, simply because he's such a good fit within the world of Doctor Who, and gives you so many opportunities to tell very Doctor Who-like stories, but in a slightly new way. And that's always a great opportunity to have the chance to do that in the world of Doctor Who, where so many stories have been told, is a great opportunity. And so I think it's the popularity of the character is sort of, I think, because it is sort of twofold. It comes from two directions, in the sense that it's not just how exciting it is for the character for listeners to sort of listen to. It's the opportunity it gives writers and storytellers as well. The 11 gives the writers and storytellers a huge amount of opportunity that they don't have with any other type of Doctor Who character. So it's that, it's sort of energy from both directions when it comes to the 11.
So how is it directing for the 11?
Initially, it was quite technical, just for the first couple of days while we were establishing what it was and what we were going to do. And there are a couple of sort of slight technical aspects to the playing of the 11 that we were sort of playing with over those first couple of days. There are things we were doing when we were first started recording with the 11 that we don't do now, because we know what we're doing with it now. We realise what we can do, what we don't need to do. And so it's actually quite straightforward now. And Mark's on top of it. I mean, one of the great, again, David coming up with the idea of Mark playing the role was a stroke of genius, because Mark's just such a good, how do I find a way of saying this that isn't, he's a great technical actor. Mark's just a great actor. I mean, he's just a brilliant actor. Full stop, that's sort of clear to everybody. But one of the things that makes him a brilliant actor is he's a great technical actor. So he knew, looking at the 11, that the 11 required a sort of a discipline, an approach to be able to sort of play that role as quickly as it needs to be played in the studio when we're recording, because we don't have time. So he doesn't waste any time with the 11. You know, he's on it, he knows what he's doing with it, he does his prep. On his phone, he's got clips of all the 11 characters. So at any time, sometimes just before we do a scene, he might take a quick look at it and go, oh, the five pops up in this one. Hold on, let me just remind myself what the five sounds like. And he'll play himself a clip of him playing the five. And then he'll say, yeah, okay, got it, right, let's go. And we go for the scene. So Mark makes it effortless in the studio from my point of view to record, because he's just completely prepped and on top of what he's doing. And he makes it seem effortless. But we all know, and I think one of the reasons everybody's in awe of what he does is anybody who spends any amount of time in this business knows that's a really complex role to play. And Mark makes it just seem effortless and fun, which is, of course, what it needs to seem to be. But he really does. He just knocks it out of the park every time he does it.
There's a fantastic chemistry between him and Paul McGann as well. It's almost like the laid-back McGann Doctor, whereas you've got the slightly intense, almost bordering on at times psychotic Scotsman. And I think there's that wonderful chemistry. There's such a great contrast.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. And maybe that's, I mean, I know the 11's cropped up in many other places, but he's probably spent more time with the 8th Doctor than anybody else, hasn't he? I would have thought. And maybe there's a good reason for that. Yeah.
What has been your favourite thing to do with the 11 so far?
Oh, I don't know if I could answer that. I spend all my time almost consciously not having favourites, because it's really appalling, particularly to come on a podcast where it's recorded and for posterity. Yeah, I genuinely don't, everything I'm working on at the time I'm working on it is my favourite thing, but I put as much as I can into it while I'm working on it. And to be honest, I'm very lucky. I get to work on quite a few productions, and so I have to just, whatever I've just worked on, it's done, it's in the past, and I'm back onto whatever I'm doing at the moment. So the thing I'm working on at the moment is always my most favourite thing. Also, terrible memory. You tell me what we've done with the 11, and I'll tell you how much I like what I think of it. Let's do it that way. I'll throw it back at you. You can be my memory bank. I'll always have a fondness for Doom Coalition, simply because it was the first one, and I script edited that one and worked on that entire series, coming up with that entire series idea with David. I'll always be fond of that, just because of the amount of work David and I put into Doom Coalition and coming up with the whole story. So just for that reason, yeah, I'll always have a fondness. But Kenny, go on, tell me.
Okay, well, no, my favourite thing was Brother Octavian, because I never saw that coming, and then the arrival of the Nine, and I think that was just, oh my God, brilliant.
Yeah. I always liked the 8 anyway, but that wasn't that lovely. It was just such a sort of charming... And again, it's one of those things where you think, in retrospect, once you know, you think, well, that's okay. I should have seen that coming, shouldn't I? But of course you don't. That's the great thing about this well-deployed sleight of hand in storytelling. But yeah, I even love that about the 11, that there's always going to be that contrast. We can, if we've got the character, we can even introduce one of the nicest Time Lord regenerations that there's ever been, alongside the chaos and nastiness of all the others.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that you can only have that moment once where you get the revelation. Because remember, Becca heard it and you were just like, you never saw that twist coming either. It was just so good. Ken, that has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us on Pieces of Eight this week and sharing some fantastic insight into the 11.
Well, do you know what? It's a pleasure. Thank you very much indeed for asking me.
It's been lovely.
I found that absolutely fascinating, as we get really good insight into how you take an idea and how you develop into something that's fully rounded for drama.
Yes, it's amazing how you can take an idea and just run with it and create something that's so incredible through the power of conversation and bringing other people to the table.
Yes, a lot of credit has to go to Matt Fitton, who wrote the first script for Doom Coalition and took David's ideas and developed them into something from a few lines and created something that's three-dimensional. Or with him being a Time Lord, should it be four or perhaps five dimensions?
Ooh, maybe so. During the course of the 8th Doctor's adventures, Matt's not been the only writer to put finger to keyboard to bring the 11 to life. In Doom Coalition and its sequel Ravenous, Matt, John Dorney, Mark Platt, Edward Collier, and Guy Adams also got to write for him. Kenny, you spoke with John Dorney, didn't you, about writing for the 11?
I did indeed. This was a wee while ago, actually, back when we did season one with Solitaire. That's how far we plan ahead, listeners. John's a really good friend of mine, and he's so bloody talented, as he always finds a way to make a complex idea work brilliantly again and again and again. And it's not just the one idea he has, he keeps coming up with more and more. I really should hate him, as he's so good, but I can't. He's my pal. Anyway, John took time out from a touring schedule in his other job as an actor to have a chat with Pieces of Eight about writing for the 11 and also his earlier incarnation, the 9. And also,
spoiler alert,
killing off the 11.
Dun, dun, dun.
Hugh Dorney.
Hi, I'm John Dorney, and I'm one of the Big Finish writers who writes for the 11.
What was your reaction when you were first told about the 11 as a character when he was outlined to you?
Well, I thought it was a really exciting and fun idea, really. I didn't have much to do with the 11 in the first box set. In fact, but for quite a while, actually, I don't think I even wrote the 11 really until Stop the Clock as a major character. He's there as a cameo in scenes from her life. But it took me a long time to actually get to the Abbey, which was in some ways quite disappointing because I worked with Mark Bonnar in a National Theatre production. God, now it's 25 years ago, getting on for. Yeah, 97 to 98, so it's not quite 25 years ago. And it was a production called Flight, directed by Howard Davis, the late great Howard Davis, who was a marvellous director, and basically played by Bulgakov. And there was a distinct memory where me and Mark both had to climb up this enormous bit of stage to pretty much the top of the Olivier Auditorium, which is pretty high, where we just then spend, you know, 15 minutes playing a card game against each other as like extras in the background. Yeah, and we kept refusing to do that. We for the safety purposes, they insisted that there was like harnesses we had to attach to, but it was impossible to do it with harnesses. So we're just going to take the risk. You know, if we'd fallen, we'd have died. So you know, you could get actors to do anything. Anyway, that's by the by. So I really liked the concept and was excited to see where it was going to go. But as I say, I wasn't in really writing for quite a while.
What did you think when you were told that Mark was going to be playing him?
I was very excited. Mark is, as I say, just a fantastic actor. You know, I think there's a sequence in his series of Line of Duty, which is the second series of Line of Duty, where it does one of the single best bits of acting you will ever see in anything, which is, you know, an interrogation scene with a man at the absolute height of his power being reduced to a quivering wreck within, you know, 10, 15 minutes, whatever. And you follow it pretty much in real time, and just the detail and the levels. And I'd kind of felt, because he's had a huge theatrical background at the time, less so now, he's going to be well employed by TV, I think, and film a bit more these days. But because he'd had that theatrical background, it's something that could be missed a bit when the casting happens. And ironically, also happened with John Heffernan, who, you know, full-scale theatrical legend. And his first appearance in a Big Finish was a part smaller than mine in Return of the Swarm, where he like got bumped off immediately. And I seem to remember being in the green room doing the interviews going, I mean, you do realise how well respected John Heffernan is. And much the same with Mark, because Mark's first appearance, I think, was possibly playing random Scottish background characters in English Way of Death, I think. Was it that? I think it was that. Yes, and it just felt like a weird thing to say when I was going English Way of Death with a Scotsman. But yeah, he was, I think very quickly with both Mark and John, everyone realised, oh, holy hell, we are onto an absolute winner with these two, because obviously, they're brilliant. And you need someone with Mark's level of capability and commitment and drive to, you know, really, you know, nail that character. So, yeah, I was excited. It's exactly one of the lists of people who go, well, who else are you going to get, really?
Of course, before you got to write for the 11 and properly, you managed to give us the 8 and the 9.
Yes.
That must have been really good, setting that up, because I never saw it coming.
Yeah, I mean, that was I think, very much part of the plan from very early on. And yeah, it was a properly exciting bit of a plot twist to be handed on a plate. And the 9 was kind of an interesting one to deal with, because he was described in the outline as one who was a bit kleptomaniac and a bit avaricious and all of that. And being a way of going, how do I make this guy the main villain of the finale of a box set? But at the same time, there was lots of things I found interesting with it, because the 8 had been, you know, a monk without possessions. That immediately meant, well, that's why he wants things. It's a reaction to the austerity of his previous incarnation, and that felt like it was a good angle to play with. And I just like the idea of kind of like of just taking what Matt had done with the 11 and just presenting it in a slightly different way, and, you know, having a different level of attack on that character. And yeah, so I tend to feel that, as I say, the 11 is kind of Matt and the 9 is kind of me, just playing with the same sort of basic bones. But yeah, it was a cracking twist to deal with, and just trying to figure out how to utilize him within the form of the story was particularly when it was basically, yeah, this is the big finale of the set and all these other things happening, and how do I make all of those threads come together quite neatly, which they eventually managed to.
The fact that, you know, the clues are all there, Octavian, it's so obvious. It's so obvious. And I just never clocked.
But you don't. The thing is, I think people aren't expecting the kind of the reverse to kind of meet the 8 after the 11 in the ongoing progression. So I think that's why we were able to largely get away with it. But at the same time, it's also, you know, Matt's written it really beautifully. And as I say, when you know it's coming, you can kind of go, it's really nicely done. It's beautifully done, but it's impeccably hidden. I think it's a really beautiful job from Matt there. That's one of my favourite Matt stories, that has to be said.
Genius, absolute genius. You did finally get to write for The Eleven with Stop the Clock. How did you find having to cope with him and all his many personalities in there?
It was fun, from what I remember. It still is. It usually is. You know, it's a tricky thing to kind of utilise the personalities with the Eleven, because they're more of a hindrance than a superpower, which is oddly enough something I've given as a note on some things recently. And that was from discussions with Matt. Whereas the Nine, he can be a bit more chatty. He's a bit less inclined to smack his previous personas down, though he does just find them largely annoying. Yeah, trying to find a way of doing it was interesting. I mean, certainly, oddly enough, there was the key scene I got from him, the one that people kind of remember, when he basically tries to talk, successfully manages to talk himself out of being locked up, and in order to kill the person doing it, where he basically says, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm just going to persuade you to let me do it. I was very determined that I wasn't going to use any of the other voices at the time. He was just full zoned in and focused as the Eleven, because I felt the other voices would probably have got in the way at that point. Yeah, it can be tricky to utilise sometimes, I find, but at the same time can also be quite good fun. And, you know, every now and then you can just throw it in as a bit of a counterpoint, as a little bit of another kind of energy, really. I certainly remember when I was writing, one of the key things I really wanted to do, I think we'd sort of promised this idea of the Doctor doing the impersonation of it. It felt like eventually someone's got to do this as an impersonation of him, and it felt like that needed to be... I think I considered that for the plot of Crucible of Souls at some point, and potentially the Doctor doing something with it, and then that's when, no, it's not there. I couldn't find a way to squeeze it in, and then eventually when it came to Stop the Clock, you're going, no, this is where it happens, isn't it? This is where that detail plays out. It feels like it pays off that arc aspect for him.
With all these voices in there, do you find it easier to find some of them rather than others? Because I think in the Six, I just think it's Robert Carlyle bursting.
To be honest, people always ask who would I imagine would be cast as him. It's like any of these things. I could imagine vague voices, but I'd never get anyone as good as who would eventually actually be cast as them, I'm sure. So I'm happy to not think about that too much. I mean, some of them are clearly distinct and quite fun to play with, like the One, the Three, and the Six all kind of leap out as relatively easy, because the One is the old sort of slightly authoritarian one. Three is the childlike one, who's very childish, and then Six is, you know, violent. And the others I occasionally just have to look up just to kind of remind myself of who they are. But they've all got their purposes and their uses. I'm sure there are some I lean into more than others, just because there are some you can definitely do things with, you know, particularly to act as counterpoint. But yeah, by and large, it's whatever feels like is the right thing to be going there.
How did you find putting the 11 and the 9 together?
Oh God, that was fun. Yeah, the odds against, which for if people haven't figured out, is a pun title. They are odd numbers. It kind of, again, this was something that I felt we sort of have to do this at some point. It felt like having a multi-number story was asking to be done. And I think when we'd got to that point in Ravenous, I'd done Companion Piece and brought the 9 back, which meant I felt that we could get away with bringing it back again and tying it all together and throwing the tricks of that. And then I just determined, I thought, well, I've got about enough. I don't want to push this longer than people can stand. I've got 10 minutes, really, and I just want to do every possible joke or variation of having them meet that I could get away with. So the things of the 9 in the 11 speaking at the same time as the 9 in real life was things like going, well, that's got to be in there. And the various interactions between the 9 within the 11 and the 9 in real life and all of that. So it basically became a question of me trying to find as many different jokes as I could within that scenario and playing them all out, which was great fun to do, really. And particularly when it was in such a sort of concentrated sequence. And obviously, you know, again, you've got a couple of great actors where it gets to be a bit of a, you know, a bit of a face-off between the actors as much as it is between the characters, really, which was, yeah, just a joy to write, really.
And once again, the clues are all there with X. Of course, it's so obvious in hindsight.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, but again, it's a useful thing of having, like, John do it, is because, you know, he's so good that you're not going to notice it's him until you're told, usually. I mean, I know some people have, you know, spotted it in advance, but we like trying to hide things, like, you know, couldn't use the word X in the title because that would have been a massive giveaway. If you see it, you go, oh, that's the number 9, isn't it? That is 9, isn't it? Yeah, and all things like that. So I hope people are surprised by it. But yeah, just it was fun, a lot of fun to do. And again, it's one of those things that I felt like we promised it without explicitly being there. That's the thing. I think everyone was kind of going, well, how would that work? And feeling that because the question has been asked, you've got to answer it eventually, I think. And I think at that point, we knew what was going to happen in Ravenous 4. Because we'd had the meeting, because I remember basically I had a meeting about Ravenous 3 and 4, where we were getting as far as even discussing what was going to happen after Ravenous. And I think of that, for some reason I wrote a companion piece really early. I can't remember quite why. And then we fit the other stories around it. And at that point I was saying, well, can I do, you know, the 9 meets the 11 for the final story? Because that feels like it had to be done. But because particularly as well, we knew that we were going to, you know, spoiler alert, kill off the 11 in Ravenous 4. I felt like, well, we've got to do this now. Because this is the point you do it, because then you're just trying to use every single variation of him. So we've had him as the companion figure, and then we've now got him meeting the 9, and every possible variation we can manage, I think, is we're trying to just squeeze out of him in the last couple of sets of the 8th Doctor one.
I remember when doing the Vortex preview, you said, please don't read 3.4, because that would have ruined the surprise. Yeah. And I didn't, which was great. So when it came along, it was like, now I completely understand why. Not even reading the cover page. So yes, well worth it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying that. Yeah, yeah. Because yeah, I kind of, a lot of the time I just want people to get the surprises. Sometimes I'm very cunning and try to be clever with those. So for buying time in the wrong woman. And again, I'd skip the next 10 seconds if you haven't heard that. Yeah, the description I've got of the newcomer is a familiar Time Lord in an unfamiliar guise, I think. Where you go, yep, that's absolutely true. But doesn't give away anything. So, yeah, I was quite chuffed with that.
And then, of course, we came to the Day of the Master. I mean, was that laid out the word go? I mean, again, spoilers, that this would be the last story for the 11 that would give us regeneration. Was that something that was laid down, or did you discuss that during the writing?
It was basically, it was to say, that meeting for 3 and 4, where we were just saying, well, what do we do? Do we kill off the 11? And I think I pretty much said, yeah, I think we should, really. He didn't want it to become too obsessed with the 11 as the run, and I thought, you know, you kind of want to keep taking the 8th Doctor to new and exciting places, and that probably meant we'd done a lot with the 11. As I say, also as well, with a lot of things we've done, with it becoming a companion briefly, within, you know, meeting the 9, it was all going to be that sense of going, well, there's a limit of new stuff we can do with him. That doesn't mean you can't kind of go back and use him in other things and play with him in his past, as we have done and are doing. But yeah, in terms of the sort of the ongoing arc, it felt like it was about the right point to just go, you know, right, that was that phase, let's move on to another phase. I think we're aware, due to various timing reasons, we needed to get it all kind of planned and came together quite quickly. So I pretty much finished, I think it was pretty much writing The Odds Against, and then pretty much straight into Day of the Master. And at that point, Matt hadn't written his 2 episodes, or even plotted them, I don't think. He got vague ideas for both of them, which was useful. And I had vague ideas of my own, I ended up writing it on the basis that I was the one who had time to, and Matt was too busy, and it was a kind of amazing meeting where you just go, my God, that's an amazing brief, and we need it by when? Oh God, right? Do you want it? You take it, and then I eventually realised that was got to be me, hasn't it? Really, but I was quite pleased eventually. It's one of my favourite stories I've done. I'm really proud of that. I really thought it was great fun to write, and it was a stressful process writing it. It's the most stress I think I've ever been writing anything, as it was tight, you know, the schedule was quite tough, and I think I'd even got so far as writing the whole of episode 1 before I'd even finished plotting episode 2. I think I even started writing episode 2 before I'd finished plotting it, because a lot of it was things like, I think I'd initially planned to try and do the whole batch, but thought, no, it's just too much, do the first half, send it over. So write that and then start on the second one. I think it was about halfway through. And as I say, I started scripting without approvals or anything like that. But at least part of that was because, you know, the cliffhanger, every single beat of that cliffhanger, go, there's only one way out of that. I know the way out of the cliffhanger, so they can't tell me, you can't use that escape from the cliffhanger because there is no other way out of it. So, yeah, I then figured out the other details as it went along and sort of dovetailed it all. Yeah. But yeah, certainly part of the original plan was bumping off the 11. By that point, we'd had Time Warp 2 out, so the 12 was an existing thing, and it seemed to indicate it was the first meeting between the Doctor and the 12. So it kind of meant, well, if I'm going to bump off the 11, the Doctor can't be there to see it. Also can't be totally surprised, can't be aware that he has regenerated from what I remember. I can't remember the exact details, but it, like a lot of the Day of the Master, I was having to factor in an awful lot of different details. Things like, you know, this actor wants to work with this actor and this person can't be available here and this person has to be in this amount of it. Oh, and this is how, yeah, and I had to fit the ending around. So if anything, I'm just delighted it all looks like it, you know, it doesn't look quite as, what's the word? It's constrained by other things. It's a bit of practical and technical considerations, which there were a huge amount within that story. And that's probably why it was stressful to write. But the fact that you hopefully don't notice any of them and it still comes across as a romp is quite exciting. But yeah, basically it led to the fact that I thought, well, it's got to be killed. He's got to be killed by the Master, hasn't he? Really? And indeed, Missy. It's called The Day of the Master. It's got to end with him killing him, which was great fun. So yeah, just to figure out what's it like when the Eleven, or indeed any of that character, regenerates. And I love the idea of him hearing his own voice inside for the first time as like the final beat of it, which struck me as a fun thing to do.
Yeah, definitely caught me by surprise, because I remember actually listening to it for the first time. I was at a roundabout just outside Edinburgh and went back and re-listened to it. What? I didn't just hear that. And Mark is just so good at the end as well, as he always is.
Yes, I think he did it. He did it really quite, yeah, he dived in fairly strongly on it from what I recall, yeah. Yeah, but then Mark's great. As I say, we were very aware at the time of going, well, this isn't the end for the character, because we can bring him back in other forms and do other things with him. So, and indeed I have, you know, I've done some stuff with him for Unit Nemesis. You know, the Eleven will return, because, you know, everyone, you know, loves him, really.
Fantastic. John, thank you so much once again for joining us on Pieces of Eight.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And that, dear listeners, hopefully gives you a wee taste of what has gone into the creation of the Eleven from start to finish in the Eighth Doctor Adventures.
So, Kenny, how much of the Eleven do you think is down to the scripting and how much is down to the performance?
That's a really good question, because when you have a look at the script, yes, the Eleven is quite strong as a character. He comes out and you think, yep, this is really good. But I think the fact that Mark brings so much character and personality to each of those incarnations, the fact that you know when you hear, I mean, obviously the Six is a very easy one to recognise, because he's going to kill you! And I believe that's the most draining of all the performances to do, from what Mark's told me before. And,
well, that was terrifying.
Oh, good, good. And then I'll now just say the word murder, because it sounds so good in a Scottish accent, particularly if you're from Glasgow. Murder. But no, I think the Eleven works so well, and the Nine as well, because of the actors that are playing them. They really do imbue them just with that little extra bit. You can have a brilliant idea, a brilliant script, but it can perhaps sometimes things can fail in the performance. But I think because Mark is so invested into the character and puts so much time and effort and prepares for it, it does make a world of a difference, because he keeps recordings on his phone. He's got a wee audio file with each of the incarnations, so we can call that up if he's like, hang on again, which one's the Five? So we can summon that up and listen to it and go, oh yeah, it's that one. I think Ken mentioned that. Yeah. So yes,
did,
there's
yes.
There's always the fact that he's so prepared like that. It's meticulous. It's wonderful. And he keeps it on his phone all the time, not just for big finish days.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. What do you think about him? Do you think it's very much 50-50 great script, but then just the performance just lifts him really from being a great character into a brilliant one?
I mean, the idea of a good script is that anyone can pick it up and do a good job. That's the whole thing behind a good script. But I can't see anyone else playing the Eleven. He is brilliant. His acting is phenomenal. Can I go like 60-40? Can I do that?
Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Of course it's you.
Sorry.
I think he's just, it's wonderful. It's just a wonderful performance. Such a good actor. And I think we're very lucky to have him.
We are indeed.
So before we go, let's leave the final word to the man behind the Eleven, Mr. Mark Bonner. When I spoke to him recently, I put it to Mark that he's created a character who isn't just one of the most memorable Big Finish creations, but also one of the most popular in the history of all of Doctor Who of all time ever.
Well, that's very kind of you to say so. I mean, it's slightly surreal for me, you know, to be a part of this whole universe is a, you know, reward enough. It's a wonderful thing to be a part of the Big Finish world, you know, and now I'm doing Space 1999, you know, that's another kind of, you Yeah, it's slightly surreal. It never stops being slightly surreal that, you know, I'm not only in this, but I, people seem to love the Eleven. I love the Eleven. He's a fantastic character, you know, a fantastic creation. And, you know, that's due to the wonderful minds, Big Finish, you know, that invented him, you know, and came up with the idea and it sort of nudged me in the various directions when we first started out sort of talking about him as a character. What he would be like, you know, all the team at Big Finish kind of helped with that kind of evolution.
So that's the 11 for our episode 11.
Next week we'll be back with the 12th, but hopefully we won't both regenerate into little old ladies by the time it arrives. Our next episode is the first part of our second season finale. Yes, this is our equivalent of Army of Ghosts and Doomsday.
I just hope that by the end of it, we're not separated in different dimensions. 450 miles between Southampton and Glasgow is bad enough.
It certainly is. But then we'd have to press our faces to the wall and look sad. One of us would have to look cold, the other would have to look warm. I don't want to have to do that and then have to burn a star to record new episodes every week for season 3.
We'd run out of stars.
We don't want to do that. We don't want the stars going out.
No, we like the stars.
We do.
Anyway, it's a good job that we've already got 2 future episodes fully recorded.
Definitely.
Anyway, join us next week as we have a good in-depth chat with Matthew Jacobs, the writer of the TV movie, as we chat about his long association with Doctor Who, which stretches back to the William Hartnell years.
Quite amazing. It's quite an amazing connection throughout his life. So yes, and the fact it still goes on today. So looking forward to it already. Although I say looking forward to it, we recorded this in the summer, so we know what happens in it, but still, it's going to be fun.
Organisational skills.
Yeah, we try to have them. Becca, great to see you again, as always.
Always great to see you.
And let's come back and do it again, this time next week.
Same Doctor Who channel, same Doctor Who time.
That's the one. Bye.
Bye.